Good morning and welcome back to the Counselor's Cafe, where we focus on the care and feeding of the mind, the psyche, the spirit, whatever it is that makes us human, conscious of self, capable of change, and free to make choices. A little psychology, a little philosophy, and maybe a little bit of something else. We've got a lot of something else around here. Okay. This morning we invite you to join in and on our continuing conversation with Paul Nagy about the nature of existence, and our drop-in guest Rocco is with us today also.
Good to have you here, Rocco.
Yeah.
Thank you, Paul. It's always a pleasure to be here.
Paul is the host of Touchstones, which comes on Tuesdays, and that's at
11 a.m. until 12 noon.
Right.
We usually deal with a spiritual or religious topic. We've got a couple of interesting shows coming up, I believe.
Yeah, you always do. And, of course, Rocco is the host of Saturday Morning Music Hall.
9 until 12 noon on Saturday mornings, Audrey.
That makes the weekend start, so far as I'm concerned. I wouldn't know it was Saturday. Okay. Today's discussion is going to take off from the ideas presented by Dr. Wayne Dyer in his presentation of The Power of Intention. And please join in the discussion with any questions or comments you may have by calling 929-601. We want this to be an open community radio program for everybody to get in on the discussion and talk about some of the things that are, you know, maybe a little bit deeper than what we're going to have for supper. Although that's pretty deep.
And a sort of belated sorry that we probably are not web streaming today. So if you're trying to get in touch with us over the internet, you're not finding us live. You're going to have to listen to us as a podcast. Because we're not connected to the internet right now. It won't be for a while.
Well, we're working. We've got a whole ad hoc committee working on the internet connection problem.
Yes, and I do agree. I think we need the internet connection more than we need a maid to clean up after the rowdy overnighters.
Well, we also need a little bit more cooperation, I think, on keeping the station in order. But again, call in 929-9601 if you want to add to the conversation, you want to disagree, you want to bring in other topics, whatever. If you can't call right now, you can always get in touch later by emailing counselorscafe@nc.rr.com or by writing to Counselor, Box 6, 200 West Weaver Street, Carborough. Let us know what it is you'd like to talk about. And, of course, while I'm talking about getting in touch, check out WCOM's website at www.communityradio.coop. Take our listener survey, find out about all the rest of our programs, and go up in the upper left-hand corner of the homepage and click on the Donate Now button, because we are all listener-supported, all-volunteer community radio. Okay, I'm going to take a little break here and play some Simon and Garfunkel. Cloudy. Let's see how this goes.
Cloudy. The sky's gray and white and cloudy. Sometimes I think it's hanging down on me. It's a hitchhike 100 miles. I'm a ragamuffin child. With a finger painted smile, I left my shadow waiting down the road for me a while. Cloudy. My thoughts are scattered and they're cloudy. They have no borders, no boundaries. They echo and they swell from Tolstoy to Tinkerbell, down from Berkeley to Carmel. Got some pictures in my pocket and a lot of time to kill. Hey sunshine, I haven't seen you in a long time. Why don't you show your face and bend my mind? These clouds stick to the sky like a floating question mark. They linger there to die. They don't know where they're going, and my friend, neither do I. Cloudy, 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 cloudy.
Cloudy. We've had more than clouds recently. We've had some torrents. Had lightning come in that just absolutely crashed. Practically felt like it was knocking on my front door.
Well, you know, Audrey, we really needed the rain.
Oh, yes. I mean, I'm very happy to see that it's out there watering my plants. I put in some new plants this year, and it's nice to have the heavens and the power and the source, the intention coming down.
Yes, thunder and lightning
the plants right.
And hail.
Right. So, as I said, we're going to talk about the power of intention as it was presented and is presented frequently by Dr. Wayne Dyer. And one of the things that he starts his talk out with is the statement, when you change the way you look at things, the things you look at change. So what do we think? Do we actually have an effect simply by observing what's going on?
Attitude. It's all in the attitude. If you don't have the attitude, you can't have the beatitude.
We're getting into some rap. This is going to be a good Monday morning.
And also, I think, Audrey, it depends on what you're looking at.
True. I mean, if I'm looking at you, I don't think you're changing by the fact that I'm looking at you.
Yeah, you're growing older as the longest, the more I stare.
You're such a cheerful soul.
Yeah, I'm sorry about that. Well, you know what? I subscribe to this free email list, and as a similar to what you just wrote, there's this thing here which says, just as a small leaf can obscure the sun when held before our eyes, so can the past cloud the present and hide our true divinity. With Vedic methods and tantras, we remove the impediments to reveal the ever-present inner light. I think that the idea that we have a matter of perspective, you know, that things have these different kinds of perspective, is an aspect of this thing. The basic difference, though, is that a perspective, you know, is within you, whereas what Dyer's saying is, he's saying that if you change the way you see things, the things themselves change.
Okay, you're changing. In other words, it's not what you're seeing that's changing. It's your attitude towards what you're seeing.
I'm sorry. That's one perspective. Uh-huh. That's the limited view, right? Which sort of goes with this idea of just how you can obscure the sunlight before your eyes if you put a leaf in front of it. So in the same way, in that way, you could say, well, see, I blotted out the sun. See.
Right. So now there is no sun because I can't see it.
Because of this perspective.
It reminds me of babysitting with my
But you haven't really blotted out the sun. Right. You've just done this thing with this perspective. Now, what Dyer is saying is something which is more dire, in the sense that he's claiming that, well, if you change the way you see the sun changes, you know, what it does. So it's sort of like saying, well, I don't see, the sun will not burn my skin when I go out and hang out in it for hours at a time without any sunblock.
It still will.
That's the question.
That's
he does. He doesn't bring. He doesn't look at the question. He brings it up, and he goes into atomic physics, and he brings up all the things about how subatomic things. Things seem to change if you observe them. The very way that you position yourself to observe something conditions how you see it. It doesn't say that in itself that the wave particle actually changes from a wave or a particle.
There are physicists who say it does. That your involvement in seeing it, you're seeing a particle or you're seeing a wave, actually affects the actual thing.
Yeah, I've heard this.
Right.
I've heard this. This is wonderful. This is on a subatomic scale.
Uh-huh.
And most of us deal at a macroatomic scale.
True.
So on a macroatomic scale, there's not a lot of evidence.
Well, I'm thinking of one thing. When you say attitude, your attitude towards what you're seeing can change the attitude of if you're dealing with people.
Okay.
The attitude of the person that you're dealing with. So that if I go into a restaurant, and I remember this story, going into a restaurant with a friend one time, and the waitress or the hostess was very harried and very, not in a good mood, and we stood and we waited and waited, and she was rushing around and looking very angry, and there was a table and two chairs in the front of the restaurant that was unoccupied. There was nobody else there. And I suggested to my friend we go down and sit down at it. She came over. She was very, very annoyed. And rather than, because I felt, maybe I shouldn't have done it. So, I wasn't being saintly. I was just saying, I'm sorry if this was, if we shouldn't have done this. It's just, I thought we would just sit down. And her attitude changed. So what the energy I brought to it through the way I was seeing things changed what actually existed.
Okay, and this is on an interpersonal basis.
Okay.
Right? You didn't change the atomic structure of the chair you sat on.
Right.
But I could have changed
the subatomic structure.
I could have changed something in the way her brain worked. I could have. You don't know.
By your facial expressions, body language, you were able to change what she was.
Right.
For a brief period of time.
Right.
But with what you're looking at, intending to affect, if it were not alive, let's say, your intentions, vision, whatever, looking at, say, something like a rock, can you change the rock? Rock's not alive in the sense of a human being.
One of the things that Dyer talks about, and we're talking about a 2-CD thing that he produced.
The power of intention. A special that was produced for
PBS
some years
it was
back.
It's frequently shown too during their fundraising.
Yeah,
he's on a lot. But one of the things that he talked about was Viktor Frankl, who's a psychiatrist actually, and pretty well known for having written *Man's Search for Meaning*. And he talks about something when Frankl was in a concentration camp and was served this watery soup with a fish head in it that was supposed to give it some flavor. And his decision to look at this and see beauty in the fish head. Now, did he actually change the construction of the fish head? Probably not. But again, maybe it's attitude, as you're saying.
Well, but I think there's actually there's a really good term for this change that we do affect amongst one another by our attitude.
Uh-huh.
And it's called intersubjectivity.
Uh-huh.
So in other words, my subjectivity can affect your subjectivity, intersubjective. By the way I respond to you, by my behavior, by my my own attitude, by my own. I can see this, and Dwyer himself gives a story on that tape of his being late at the airline, being forced off his own airline, having all these books that they were going to hawk at his at his speaking engagement, and the woman getting ready to go with her spiel that there's no room,
right?
No room at the inn,
right?
Joseph, the father of Jesus, the earthly father of Jesus, obviously didn't have
Dyer's
powers of persuasion, because he got stuck in the stable, right? With his wife about to give birth. If that had happened the way Dwyer, he'd have been put in a penthouse.
Dyer,
okay.
I do the same thing, because it's Wayne Dyer, and
Dyer,
I keep wanting calling him Dwayne Dwyer.
Yeah.
Well, Audrey, with your fish head story, with the fish head in the water,
right?
What about classical conditioning? What about a child who's brought up every morning, gets up in the morning, and is presented a bowl of water with a fish head in it?
Right.
Wouldn't you think she's classically, or he's classically conditioned to that for breakfast, so to speak, and would not see it distasteful?
Well, having raised a number of children, I can tell you, children are born with tastes. They're born with things, likes and dislikes. So you may possibly have a child, present this to a child who will accept this, but then I can think of a number of instances where presenting something to my children, and I'll give the quick story. I don't like liver. I just don't like the taste of liver.
Only with ketchup, please.
Oh, lots of it. And I thought, well, this is going to, I do not want my children to have, grow up with my prejudices. I mean, insofar as perhaps they'll like it. My husband liked it. So I made this liver and onions, and I did the whole deal. It was tender, it was this, it was that, and I sacrificed myself. I sat there with a smile and ate this stuff that I really hate the taste of. And my kids sat there. I still see. My husband wasn't there for dinner that night, so I'll tell you that because at the end of the story. They take a piece and they put it in the house, and they get this quizzical look on their face.
Well, the texture of liver is so weird, too.
Well, this was nice, tender liver. The texture wasn't bad.
But still the texture, even in tender liver, is weird. It's powdery in a way that, and pasty in a way that other meat is not like.
Right. Well, at any rate, they looked at each other, they looked at me, and I smiled and said, "Isn't this good?" And took another piece, lying in my teeth, because, if it's supposed to be good for you. And they sort of pushed it around. One of them tried another piece, and then they kind of pushed it around. And I looked at them and said, "I can't stand it either." And we took the liver and we fed it to the cats, who loved it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, of course.
So,
You were being really good to your cats.
I was being really good to my cats.
Somewhere along the line, I've read that the liver of a polar bear, grizzly bear,
really?
Large bear, is toxic to human beings. It has so much vitamin A in it
you can overdose on that. So far as the conditioning is concerned.
But don't you think
whoever got a chance to eat the liver of a grizzly bear?
Well, the
ones who didn't survive, yes. They weren't around to tell us not to eat it.
So. That's right.
But don't you think we can all be classically conditioned to like or dislike
things? But that's the point,
That's not Frankel's point, though.
Yeah.
You see, Frankel, for one thing, was in a concentration camp, and it was being systematically starved.
Right.
So in some ways, the fish head was the only protein he was going to get that day.
Right.
So, but at another level... And he was concerned, and he was in a problem. He knew he was in a problem. I mean, the whole situation, he knew that there was this issue of survival. He was seeing people around him not thrive and die.
Right.
He was seeing people do all these various things, some of which he saw as really maladaptive to the situation. And he was thinking, how am I going to survive? And so he had this question. It was a very in your face question.
Yes, absolutely.
How can I survive? And it was at that moment that he saw that the way he could survive was by changing an attitude within himself.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't change the fish head. It didn't cause him to immediately escape the
confines of
the prison. or it didn't make him all of a sudden make the guards suddenly, like him.
Right.
You know, as opposed to other prisoners. You know, I mean, you don't have any of these so-called. And the thing about Wayne
Dyer
is that he is constantly talking about this other end of the thing, about how you can, you know, change the attitude of the guards so that they'll, you know, give you an extra portion. You know, this is
Going to his story about the working with the airline personnel, and when I was listening to that again this time, I thought, boy, is that manipulative, because his attitude and the way he seemed to describe it at that time was that his purpose was not to make life better for this airline clerk. His purpose was to get his own way. So he was conning her.
Yeah, well, and it's sort of like you can get more honey, you can get more honey with honey than you can with vinegar.
Right,
So he smiled and made her feel good. And to be honest with you, every con man knows that. You know, for another, you know, like I was reading a book, called, How to Spot Criminals Before They Get Over on You.
Uh-huh.
And it's got full of very, very good things. And, of course, one of the, the first part of the book, a good third of the book is how to tell when your people lie.
Oh, yeah, right.
And one of the things you do is, which I do a lot on the show and my other show, is you hem and haw. Oh, well, So obviously, all I do on this show and my other show, even though I'm talking about the eternal verities, is I'm obviously lying to you about them. But be that as it may, but you can't use just one or two things to prove that you're lying. I mean, there's other things. There are other giveaway signs.
Uh-huh.
One of them is if you fidget with your hands.
Yeah, well, I'm sitting here playing with my rings.
If you're shrugging, there's an unconscious shrug of the shoulders. Like, did you kill your wife? No.
This is not TV, but Paul is shrugging his shoulders.
Shrugging his shoulders. There's a downward glance. You can't look at a person in the eye. Now, a con man.
Can.
Does. Mm-hmm. Does. Blot out some of the telltale signals of a lie. For instance, a con man will look you straight in the eye and say, "Man, this is I'm going to sell you that Brooklyn Bridge." Yes, and here's the certificate that shows that I can sell it to you.
Well, Paul and Audrey,
all you have to do is give me your life savings.
Have you ever heard how some people look up and to the left or right with their eyes another sign about if they're telling the truth. I've heard that.
I don't know, because I'm doing it right now.
That's
looking off because I'm thinking. I'm trying to put my thoughts together, and if I keep looking at you while I'm trying to think, you distract me.
But here's the thing, is that we need to think when we're lying. We don't need to think if we're telling somebody about something that's actually happened.
Right, true.
So you have to make that extra effort.
Yes. That's the prevarication aspect. But if you ask somebody to think and their eyes start wandering over their head, that doesn't mean they're lying. That means they're looking for. They're looking for.
They're looking for a thought.
They're looking for that, that stray thought to catch that they can then talk with,
Yeah.
Come stray thought, land on my tongue.
Yes. Well, let's talk a little bit about what he's talking about when he says intention.
Okay.
Because he talks about intention not as being this thing where you decide what it is you're going to do and you focus on that and you have this tremendous drive that you're pushing through. He talks about intention as something you connect with and connecting with the source. And the source for him seems to be another word for what we might consider God or supreme intelligence or natural power or whatever humankind has tried, the names people have put on this, something that's indescribable that you feel a connection with from time to time. So he says intention comes from the source. And one of the things he quotes Max Planck, who's the scientist and then Nobel Prize
came up
winner
with and quantum physics.
Right.
Physicist.
And who said that all matter exists due to a force that vibrates an atom. So this is a major, major mental giant with much research, talks about a force that is not described, indescribable, that starts the atom vibrating, and that creates energy, because that's Einstein.
I don't know who the philosopher was, Paul, you might know, who said everything is just matter in motion.
Yeah, that must be Einstein.
No, it was Heraclitus.
Okay. Okay.
You know, you can only step into a river once.
Right.
And as some wag said, "Oh yeah, you can't step into the same river twice."
Twice, right.
And then the wag came along and said, "You can't step into the same river once." Because it's always moving. You know?
But then you get the whole thing about the theory of relativity, and you get that energy is matter in motion. E equals MC squared. It's matter that is moving at double the speed of light, or whatever.
And that's energy. But what we know about energy and what we know about matter is that it's composed of vast quantities of nothing.
Right.
Of non-quantities.
Mm-hmm.
There are these little spots of energy with huge amounts. And like if we had one atom and we stuck it in this room, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's like one, you know,
I'm
whatever.
Sure there's an atom or two around here.
Yeah, well, but we're raising it up so that the center of it is as big as a pencil thing.
Okay.
You know, the outside of that atom, in
the
terms
electrons.
Of its field, its electron, based on that pencil point, is going to be outside this room.
Uh-huh.
And so we're all within, you know, and so all of the stuff that we're so-called within here would be the empty space that the so-called atom thinks. And it's these, you know, connections of atoms that cause molecules, and molecules...
Right.
Create what we see.
But then, there is all that space, and then we can get into the thing of what Einstein called spooky action at a distance, and it's a precursor to chaos theory, where the whole, you know, if you can somehow get in and alter the chemical nature of something here in Carborough, you can actually affect, and the effect can be seen and measured in something similar in England or London or whatever. And this is something they have measured and seen.
Yeah, and you know...
Spooky action at a distance.
Well, another version of that. This is definitely true on the atomic scale, in which measure and time and space doesn't have the sense of endurance. That, in other words, one of the things we take for granted at our level of existence, our molecular biochemical level existence, is a sense of enduring form. We endure to a degree. Endurance doesn't seem to make sense at an atomic level. However, I mean, it has its own degree of endurance, but it's more energetic in a sense of endurance rather than a stable place. In other words, we're not making place.
Mm-hmm.
We're in the aspect of space. For instance, one of the fables of science that came out about your spooky things was the idea of the 100th monkey.
Uh-huh.
That, you know, that the monkeys on this one island all learned this trick.
Uh-huh.
And then, you know, and suddenly they found out on an island, 200 miles away, all the monkeys had picked up the trick after the, you know, and yet there was no causal relationship between them. Well, that's true. That is a story, and it's been much repeated. And three, it's been shown to be bogus, that there is no example of a 100th monkey of this happening in species of monkeys or birds or other things, that this kind of spooky action takes place.
Now, I don't know if you've read Guns, Germs, and Steel by Diamond, whatever his first name is, I can't remember, but it's about a story of why things are the way they are.
Mm-hmm.
And he talks about, in part of the book, how there seems to be simultaneous invention, say, or discovery at different points on the planet by different cultures.
Yeah, this is a Marconi, whether Marconi created the radio or somebody else. Everybody arguing over who created the first radio.
Right. Well, it's like sometimes it seems like there's an idea comes or a spark of inspiration, and it replicates itself in areas where there is no direct connection.
Yeah. You know, radio waves are a prime example, I think, of things that are present. Mm-hmm. For example, the three of us are here in the studio. Mm-hmm. The radio waves are in the room with us. Moving, we can't see them, feel them, or detect them, but they're here. Well, wouldn't it be interesting to know what else is here that we haven't discovered yet? And just because we don't know they exist doesn't mean they're not here in between us right now, interacting with us, probably affecting us in some way.
Well, how about, and this is a classic story that comes up, or thing that people throw out the idea of, have you ever felt that somebody's watching you?
Of course.
Or behind your back? You just feel it. Now, how does that happen? What's causing that?
Intuition.
Okay. What does intuition explain?
Does that mean that there's actually somebody watching you? Somewhere.
Yes, someone
somebody's thinking about you, so when your ears are burning, somebody is thinking about
you. Well, I don't know about the ears are burning bit, but I know that if you're sitting in a restaurant or you're sitting somewhere or other on the whatever, and all of a sudden you get the feeling that you're being watched, and then you turn around and somebody is staring at you. So,
Audrey, some people.
The local axe murderer.
Some people, I think, believe that.
Thank you.
Maybe not believe, but I think some. Writers have written, and scientists feel that we as modern man, modern woman, modern human beings have lost a lot of our senses and instincts from the past because we've become modern and we don't use a lot of these senses that were very important to us to survive years ago. And as a result, maybe more of us had that extra sensory perception of someone looking at us, and yet, you know, how do we know to turn around and see if someone's there?
I mean, it happens today, though. I mean, that type of thing would actually...
Well, just watch a cat walking along by itself, and you'd see it's always alert. If you just make a small sound, it will pick it right up.
Right.
Maybe people have lost that over the thousands of years, and we're no longer so instinctive.
Well, you know, that can go into a whole other thing of talking about one of the ways that adult attention deficit disorder is described is being a hunter in a former society, so that you get characteristics that were very critical and to be, you know, fostered when you are in a hunting society.
What I'm saying
is, quick, et cetera, et cetera. And then you're in a different situation where life doesn't operate like that anymore.
That's right.
But some of those instincts are still there. I mean,
and some people maybe, you know, have them more so than others.
Right.
And have carried them along, and they have the genes and what have you to be very instinctive.
Right. Well, it's, you know, when Dyer talks about hooking up with the source and intention and what he's saying, I think basically what I'm getting out of it is he's saying you can decide by your choices what your life will be like. And he mentions a number of things like creativity is I will live my life on purpose, which I think is an interesting statement. In other words, I will be aware enough to know that I can make choices and make my own decisions. So I will live my life by my decisions. You know, I did it my way.
There are people that I've run into who think that the way you live your life is by following the rules.
Mm-hmm.
You know, however, who made up the rules? Other people. And they usually made up the rules to their benefit, not to yours. So eventually you might decide that, yes, I should follow the rules, but only to the degree that it doesn't completely, totally destroy me in the process. And so, you know, so yes, I'll follow the rules, you know.
I'll follow the rules because they're convenient and because I don't want to suffer the consequences if I don't.
Well, but, or you know, but I, you know, I won't follow the rules, you know, if I just, if, you know, it's, it seems that they're of no benefit to myself or anyone else, you know.
Well, that's where you become a person who is actually aware and thinking and making the choices. And he would say, I think, that you were then connecting to the source.
Well, you're beginning to. You haven't connected to the source
yet. But you're
yet.
Beginning.
You're seeing that it may be that you're living in patterns that have been, you know, decided for you by
right.
others, be they the, you know, sort of like the way public schools are granted. Basically, public schools seem to want to create people who will obey the rules.
Exactly.
And this seems to be a real important thing in school.
Socialization.
Yeah, you know.
Fit into the society.
Right? And that's the reason why, you know, I didn't finish high school, because it was real
you
obvious.
You couldn't be socialized.
It was really obvious that I was interested in learning, and they were interested in having me behave in ways that they were manipulating me to behave. And
yes.
I decided that was ridiculous, and the heck with it. And I probably lived most of my life that way in total obscurity. But I can't say I haven't been
happy. No, you're not in totally obscure. You're on the radio at WCOM.
Yes.
Right. From obscure.
Right. But not on the satellite today.
Right. So I think one of the other things he talks about in this decision that you can make about how you live your life and how it will affect your life by deciding, and is the key word is kindness, and he uses the description of, I decide to be at peace with everyone, including relatives.
That's a hard one to do, let me
yes.
tell you.
And he does make the joke or a little side remark about friends are the sources making up to you for your relatives. You know, so you've got your friends to make up for your relatives. But again, it's the idea that approaching people with peace in you're wishing peace to them, and that in turn creates peace. I mean, you get into Hegelin, who's the natural law party, talking about meditation, and you talk about prayer at a distance actually affecting people's health.
If you approach someone mm-hmm. non-threatening, mm-hmm. it will change.
It changes the situation.
Of course, the whole situation
right.
changes.
Well, one of the things about prayer, which mm-hmm. Some people seem like somebody sent me a prayer request the other day, mm-hmm. and they said, "Well, you know, prayer for this person, you know, on July 30th mm-hmm. at a certain time at 11 a.m." You know, the likelihood of me remembering to pray for anybody at July 30th at 11 a.m. is almost nil,
especially if it's a Tuesday.
You know, yeah. So what I decided to do is I said, but I know for a fact that prayer is not limited by time and space and condition.
Right, right.
So whatever and that was it's a health concern that the person had. So I sent my prayer, which in mm-hmm. my prayer is, God, you know the good, you know, and you know what the best good for this person is, mm-hmm. and, you know, please proceed in that way,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Right.
And you know, I didn't tell God to do anything. I just told God that God already knew what to do and do it. And I was all hoping that was going to happen for the person.
Right, right.
But you know, but I didn't even say that it was, you know, to be cured or anything. But that's, you know, that's my idea of tact when it comes to my source.
Oh, okay.
You see,
I have a little bit of a different slant on that.
Yeah,
I will tell my source what I want, but I won't say do it. I'll say, please, will you surround this person with good energy? Come on, guys out there, one or more of you who are.
Well, wasn't there this book out sometime in January or February or in the fall called The Secret? They made a lot of money. And basically all it was be positive, put it out there in the universe, and you'll get what you want.
Right.
But that's
what
an
goes
old
around,
story.
What
I mean,
goes
that's
around
nothing
comes
new.
Around. Yeah, I mean,
that's,
I've been
yeah, that's,
about
that's
that.
Another version of Wayne.
Yeah. Well, that's the, you know,
of Wayne's World.
But he says, I think, a lot of things that are worthwhile, but there are a lot of things that have been said in the past in other ways, and a lot of it draws on basic things that you learn when you study psychology or psychiatry, of ways to approach problem solving.
For instance, one of the things he does do that's right, mm-hmm. is what, like you were saying, is that, you know, he sets it up as, I'm going to be kind. I'm going to set myself up to be kind.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to set myself up to be in the world, which is fundamentally at peace with everyone.
Right.
And I have no objection to, mm-hmm. that. What I have objection to is his is the level that he took it to, which is this. I see. This all works for me. Look, I have the nice wife. Mm-hmm. I have the talented children with, mm-hmm. their genius. And let me have my daughter come out and sing, mm-hmm. a song for you. Mm-hmm. And how wonderful, what a wonderful song it is. Mm-hmm. You know, and so the guy is parading forth himself as the best evidence for the truth of his miracles.
Mm-hmm.
And think of that.
Mm-hmm.
Think of that for the people who are suffering. Think of that for the people who can't get food.
Mm-hmm.
And think of this guy chortling on about, oh, see, I just changed my mind and my whole life was for me.
Well, you know? One of the things he does say in that, and because he brings that up on the CD, and he's talking about people asking him, how can you talk about changing things or the things you're doing in your life, etc., when people are starving? I mean, how can you be upbeat about anything when there's so much cruelty and injustice and etc., etc., etc. in the whole world? And what he says is that you cannot be hungry enough. You're not going to stop somebody else from starving. You cannot be poor enough. In other words, your poverty is not going to make anybody else richer.
This is true.
Right.
This is true.
But that what he does say is that by putting what I'm going to put in terms of, you know, old 60s terms or something like that, positive energy into the world, you are actually changing the world that other people live in.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're putting peace, kindness, acceptance, and a whole bunch of other things in there.
But you see, here's the difference.
Mm-hmm.
The difference is that if we actually did that from the egotistical view that he sets it up as, we're all in competition for, it hasn't changed the sense of limited good. He's saying that there's an unlimited good,
yes.
which I agree with.
Yes.
But if you're set up and you know that there's only one loaf of bread, you know, to feed the village, and you want to be filled by it,
right?
That means you're going to take a lot of away from the other village.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're in a situation where there are limited choices and there is a limited situation, and we're recognizing that the planet is a limited good that needs to be conserved.
I think Paul and Audrey, you can take any equation,
mm-hmm.
and always throw in an X factor,
mm-hmm.
to change the whole equation.
Mm-hmm.
So what Paul's saying is correct,
mm-hmm.
and what you're saying, I think, is correct. But any unknown factor can change.
The question is realizing what that factor is. I don't think he's clear enough about the source. In other words, I agree with the source. Like, one of the things he also does about the source, you know, and this is why I say that what's interesting about him is he's full of half-truths.
Mm-hmm.
He gives you half the story, and he says it's the whole story. And what's missing is real humility. He claims he's humble.
Mm-hmm.
Before the source, he's humble. Before his audience and the world, he is an arrogant blowhard, you know. So, you know, and of course, hey, you know, I, towards the source, you know, so I gave my prayer. That showed a lot of humility, if not deference, right? But I probably sound like an arrogant blowhard myself, so maybe it is the pot calling the kettle black. I don't know.
Well, let me just throw in something. When you were talking about the village with one loaf of bread, et cetera, one of the other things he said, and this I can go with, I don't know in the instance of a loaf of bread, but when you expect abundance, when you see an abundant world, you bring to yourself, you draw to yourself what you expect. And that, I think, is true in some instances, that you attract...
It's more true than not true.
Yeah. You know. Attract what it is you expect to be.
Probably because you act differently in the way you're thinking. It makes you act differently.
So maybe if there's one loaf of bread, rather than thinking I need that loaf of bread, I would look at it and say, how did that loaf of bread get there? Maybe what I need to do is go grow some wheat.
Or cut the loaf of bread in half and share it.
Or in make bread soup, make stone soup.
Well, you know,
like the children's book.
You know, I'm going to get very personal for a moment,
okay,
which I normally don't do, you know, because my ego is so well defended. And but there are certain issues in my life that have been consistent, and they're not consistent in other people's lives, but they've been very consistent in my life. Mm-hmm. And one of them is that in my life, in relationships with the opposite sex, and in terms of intimate relationships, in terms of constancy, loyalty, and truth, and fairness, I have never experienced that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what I have experienced over and over again is incredible betrayal and assault.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I've experienced it again and again and again. Now, I know that is not the experience of most people.
Mm-hmm.
I do know that it is my experience.
Mm-hmm.
And I do know that given the conditions, whatever comes up, that is more likely to happen to me in a situation where I'm bringing in my vulnerability
again
than it not happening to me. Because I've had it happen to me again and again and again. And when I've stated this in various situations, I've heard people yell out, like in that group I was in with you the other day, and immediately two or three women in the group said, "That's not true. That's not true. You know, that never, I didn't do that to you." You know? And you know, but I wasn't talking about them.
Right.
But Paul, do you think now that
But I'm saying, hey, you know, I can't, you know, I'm saying this is for me seriously unhealed, undigested trauma in my life that it repeats itself over and over again, and nothing has ever changed it.
Well, one of the things, and this,
and people like Dwyer going around, they're saying, "Well, I changed my anger against my father.
Right.
Suddenly, I was given this thing." Well, hey, I would love to change the sense of being profoundly deserted and abandoned and betrayed and victimized by the people I trust.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I would really like to change that. But every time I get myself into a situation, it happens. And I can see it happens, like, you know, here I'm going through
this story again,
I want to.
Let's get into this, because this is not really Dwyer. This is talking about what are there lessons, number one? Are there lessons to learn that you're just not learning?
Obviously. Yeah, there's obviously a lesson to be learned.
Are there similarities in the types of people that you attempt to establish a relationship with? I mean, are you attracted for some reason to, let's say, quote-unquote, the wrong type of person?
Well, actually, yeah, I mean, I already know all the answers to those things.
Right, okay.
I mean, the answer
so
to that
you
is,
could possibly,
I already know that if I'm attracted to a woman, she is certifiably crazy. Yeah, I mean, it may not be there.
And then, if what you really search for is reliability,
there's no connection whatsoever, it's a dud.
You might just look for it in a different kind of person.
What would happen if you went into the relationship with a whole different attitude and a whole different mindset?
I've changed that attitude many times. I have strategized around this a lot of times. And one of the things I've really thought is interesting is I have seen, like one of my last Fargos on this, I've seen a person who was very capable of providing me providing a solid, good relationship. She just couldn't do it with me. She bounced right out of my relationship and immediately found one that was exactly suitable for her. Mm-hmm. It wasn't with me. Mm-hmm. But it was also the terms the terms she needed to be in a good relationship.
Right.
And this is specific to this situation and not to everyone, is that she needed to have a sense of control. And I was, quote, too complex for her to control. She felt really, unsettled about it because I was too whatever I am.
Well, again, as you said, you know all these things.
Sure.
You know all the...
I've been through it too many times. Right. I have to know this stuff.
So is there some way for you to then weigh what your particular needs are? Which are the ones that are most important to you? Prioritize. And if it's someone who is faithful to you, someone you can trust, then look for those two characteristics rather than somebody who is crazy and exciting in some way.
Yeah, there has to be some attraction.
Pick your qualities.
And
well,
there has
of course.
To be some mutual attraction.
Of course.
Mutuality has been missing.
Sometimes,
it's difficult.
Paul, we find things and find people when we're not even looking for them. And if we try too hard to find someone, it's much more difficult.
Well, I've been happily not looking for anybody for years now,
and I've managed to
not find anybody too.
Be the person you want to meet.
Yeah.
So that's the bottom line.
Mm.
And not only that, for one thing, it'll occupy your time, so you won't be obsessed with finding somebody because you'll be too busy trying to be the person you would like to attract.
Yeah.
And then like.
But the only reason I bring this up is
right.
Is not to say look my my unregenerate neurosis, but rather the. But rather to show that somebody who has this half-baked view of reality, it may work for them very nicely, but there's a profound sense of myopia in it. They don't mm-hmm. see the whole story. They definitely show an incredible limited capacity for true compassion. There's anything that comes true with the way what's-his-name talks about his experience is you could show that, yes, he has an ability to have some compassion, mm-hmm. specifically about those people who gratify his needs.
Mm-hmm.
He's very clear about that.
Mm-hmm.
His wife gratifies his needs. Very well done. His children reflect their own little things and gratify his needs.
Mm-hmm.
All very done. But the more and the more he deals with issues beyond that, the less capacity he has mm-hmm. for compassion, and that's an edge for him to deal with.
Right,
I've got my own edge.
You're talking about the person and how he deals with things, and it comes down to anybody who thinks they have the whole truth is immediately a little suspect. Because one person does not have the whole truth.
Like Dyer. There was someone, I'm going to say 12 to 15 years ago, I believe he was an educator, who came out with this cute little, "We learned it all in kindergarten." Have you ever
uh-huh.
read or heard of that?
I don't think so.
Well, he came out with a poem.
Yeah, every 15 things I learned in kindergarten.
Jackie's in the other room. She's shaking her head. Yes, she heard of it.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
And he sums up the way we should live, be, mm-hmm. act, interrelate with other people,
right.
all in this 15-20 line little poem, and it's very, very profound.
Right.
And you know, we should share things. We should not hurt people. And, and I'll have to see if I can get a copy somewhere.
Yeah.
I'll bring it in, and we'll read it. And you'll see. I can't think of his name, and it's been put on posters. Possibly Jackie.
Yes, I think Jackie's going to come in and bring it.
I don't remember the name either, but it's everything we need to know we learned in kindergarten. And that's what I was thinking when somebody suggested the maid service. One of the first things you learn is pick up after yourself.
Yeah. That's right.
Jackie, that was right. That was one of the rules that he learned. Pick up after yourself.
Right? Yes. I'll see if I can bring it in.
Okay.
Yes.
Right.
Everything we need to know.
Yeah, the guy was a Unitarian minister, and they were his. They were notes from his church bulletin that he wrote for this congregation that he reworked into a little book.
And
it created a nice retirement for him, so he didn't have to be a Unitarian minister anymore. So you know, that's amazing how our creative edge can work for us at times.
Well, we've sort of dabbled a little bit with the power of intention and with the idea of a source of the notion that there is something else there. I mean, one of the things that I could
that is fundamentally good, as Dwyer says.
Right.
And
Dwyer says. That's something that Frankl also says. He says, at our core, we are all perfect.
Yeah.
And for him, the core, the inside, the center of each individual is what is connected to what he might call the source. Or he doesn't use those same words, but it's. And Dwyer talks about the fact that this connection gets encrusted and rusty and broken and frayed, et cetera, et cetera. And we need to take a conscious effort to clear off all the negative things that we've learned. Anyway, I thank you, Rocco, for being here this morning.
Thank you. You were awfully quiet this morning.
Well, sometimes he has a hard time with the two of us.
I'm in here with two pros that are very, very profound.
Talkative.
Very, very profound. Very intelligent people.
Yeah, even if we are unregenerate neurotics.
Paul, thank you much, and listen up next week for the Counselor's Cafe. We might have some changes coming up we'll let you know about. And stay tuned now for Tobin, Logan, and Readings.
Tune to your community radio station, 103.5 FM, WCOM LP, Chapel Hill and Carrboro.